Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into a very late recording of the Six Again podcast. It's 9:45 on Tuesday night. We're both wrecked, absolutely wrecked. I think Jared's in Cairns at the end of another long work trip. And I just got back from my first ever adult gymnastics.
Parkour. Session. Adam's doing parkour.
I wish. There was the offer for parkour tonight. But I just wanted to ease into it. And I did a few forward rolls, a couple of flips, and almost threw up because I ate burritos before I went. Not a great idea. Don't recommend it.
You had burritos before going to
you. That's the thing with kids. Like, we had dinner at 6, and I figure, I'll just do some stuff on the Olympic rings and maybe some stuff on the parallel bars, just do some strength holds and stuff, and get there and see this dudes and chicks just running across the floor, flipping and all this stuff. They're like, oh, you do, come and have a go, and teach me how to do proper rolls and stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Got home and just like sat in the shower, just rocking back and forth for 10 minutes, just going, oh, God. So, bit of a later start. And last night with Jared on work trip, it's hard to get hooked up. So, we're only, I'll put it this way, this is how big Australia is. If I was doing this podcast with someone in Sydney, they'd be closer to me than you are. And I'm on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah.
That's how fucking big Queensland is and how big Australia is. That's nuts. So
I kind of wish it was last year, though, because this is where Cairns is where Origin was last year.
Wasn't in Townsville?
I don't care. It was North Queensland. And we kicked
it's not even close. Oh, God. Bloody numpy. Anyway, so we're going to do a round 17 wrap-up. It was round 17, right? There was like literally no fanfare around it. So we're assuming it's round. Yeah, round 17. There we go.
We're not going to have much wrap up, guys. No one actually cares about what happened on the weekend.
Yeah, Walt watched three of the four games and he's already piked tonight because of how late it is. Jared watched the Knights game and I watched the Wallabies versus England, the Austrian Grand Prix. What else did I watch? Oh, and the NHL draft.
I really remember when we were bright eyes starting this podcast. Like, yeah, you know what? We'll work out games to watch it. If you miss one, we'll tag team and the other person can watch it. And now it's like, you know what? We'll just watch the highlights.
No, that is not what we do. That's only what we do on the four game weekends when Origin's on the next week. And that's what everyone's already looking forward to. On a normal weekend, we're still pretty good. I got to be honest. Anyway, we'll jump over to footytips.com.au and the Hop Nation sponsored 6CN footy tipping comp. And you can see that, yes, I've missed a couple of games because I've had my two worst rounds of the year these 2 weeks. But round 17 is a tipping round in progress because State of Origin is the fifth of the five games in this round. And at this moment, Rocking Horse Road has a 1-point lead. They're on 109. The underscore Irks on 108. Reggie Sidesteps 107. I'm on 106. And Timbo 21's on 104. I think it's the first time in quite a while that the top five are all on different points. And actually continues down to Spencer Blues at 103 before we get any double ups. So obviously we'll do a recap of that after Origin. No one's in line for a full round because that's a lie. I just saw there's two fours in the comp. So someone called 5-8. Yeah, very smart. And Easy Rider 22 are both on 4 at the moment. So depending on who they've gone for.
Who they tip for Origin?
I can't see on the laptop. That's only something on the phone that I can see.
Yeah, right.
It's a different layout. So, yeah, if you're on the ESPN footy tipping, the footytips.com app, you can see what everyone has pick? No, you can't actually. You can't even see it till the game started. So I don't know. No idea. We'll see. All right. Before we get into the round 17 games, over the past week, the Australian schools comps have been on for rugby league. So in Redcliffe, over 5 days was the Australian Schoolboys Championships. In the under-18s, Queensland Secondary Schools defeated New South Wales Combined Schools 32-18. In the under-15s, it was all New South Wales with combined independent schools defeating the combined high schools 16-14. And Victoria down WA 32-10 in their match. And then after that, the best 18s were named as part of the Australian Schoolboys ahead of their test match later this year. So looking through the team list there for the Australian Schoolboys, not going to go all the names, but a lot of the high schools that you expect to be there represented. Palm Beach, Currumbin. I've got a couple of representatives, Keebra Park, Marsden High School, so it's all out of Queensland there. Ipswich State High School has two players in, as does Westfields Sports High School. So there's a full team list is up on NRL.com at the moment. And the girls also had their first ever Australian Schoolboys team selected. They will actually be kicking off before the State of Origin on Wednesday night. So it'll be a combined New South Wales and ACT team will take on Queensland in the first ever schoolgirls clash at Suncorp Stadium. And an Australian side will be picked from that fixture. So if you do have tickets to the Origin Wednesday night, get there early and support the high school girls and the rugby league stars of the future in the NRLW, most likely, and get behind the initiative.
Hold up. About that, shout out to a local Palmwoods Junior Rugby League player who's actually playing in that game.
Ooh. Maybe.
She's come through the ranks at Palmwoods, and, yeah, she's going to play for Queensland tomorrow night.
What's her name?
Nancy Sullivan.
Oh, there she is, yeah, Nambour State College. Look at that. Yep. Boom. That's our old school. That's wicked. Marsden there as well, Kerwin, Mariba, Gympie State High School, Marissa Nicholson. So that's a school just across the road from where I teach, or across the town, not across the road. Trying to see if there's any other schools from around here. That's really cool. Ipswich Girls Grammar there. So, yeah, that's on before State of Origin Wednesday night. Not 100% sure if it's televised. Sorry. But, yeah, if you're at the game, try and get there early and support schools. I know, fuck, right? Outside of that, there hasn't been a whole bunch of NRL news. There's been a couple of signings. There's been, obviously, some controversy in the Melbourne Storm Cronulla game. We'll get to that in a moment. But with regards to signings, Cody Nikorima has signed on with the Dolphins. He's picked up a 2-year deal. He's in South Sydney at the moment. But yeah, the versatility, obviously, the factor played a part in that. Cronulla playmaker Matt Moylan has signed a 2-year contract extension. Now, when Nico Hines was signed with the club, I think both of us thought Moylan was going to be the odd man out with Hines, Trindle, Johnson, and Moylan having been Moylan and injured for the year leading up to Nico Hines coming in. So good on him. He's playing literally the best footy he's played since probably he was back at Penrith, I'd say. And they're the only ones that have completed deals since last pod, because we've already talked about Brighton Okora and Rhys Walsh. All right, injuries from the weekend. Warriors, oh, sorry, that's coming into this week. We'll talk about Munster and Talangi later. Michael Ravalawa, extended period of up to 8 to 10 weeks with a high-grade hamstring tendon injury. Unfortunate there for Ravalawa, our cult hero, a cult figure down at St. George. And that's pretty, no, here's the rest. Yeah, I was like, geez, that doesn't seem like it's too bad. Kenny Bromwich suffered a high ankle sprain against the Sharks. Club has indicated he pulled up all right, so should be playing in round 18. Grant Anderson, the surprise story, good news story for Storm, suffered an elbow sprain, expected to miss only a week. Jordan McLean, we know, has been ruled out of Origin due to a hamstring strain. That he'll be out for likely up to a month. Bradman Best suffered a new injury to his thumb in the loss of the Rabbitohs. He only just came back from injury, I believe.
Yeah.
We're not talking about getting injured that often. Anyway, and then judiciary from the weekend. Obviously, the big one, Brandon Smith, suspended for 3 matches under contrary conduct for calling Adam G a cheating bastard in Thursday night's loss to the Sharks. And this is an interesting one because Melbourne actually had the ball. Brandon Smith had the ball at that stage. He just had jumped up for a quick play of the ball. And obviously descent towards the referee. Cost his side 10 in the bin, a player down, and turned the ball over when Storm were in attacking position. And not a position they were in very much in that game. So you could see from the look of Bellamy's face, he was in utter shock and disbelief about what was happening, so he wouldn't have heard it.
I'm surprised Smith's still alive.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, like, I'm talking about when it was live, he wouldn't have been able to hear what was going on. So what's really interesting, though, is on NRL, they usually just put the judiciary charge up there, but for Brandon Smith's one, they've got, I think it's like 9-point panel summary for the reasons of the 3-match ban. Which they, I don't remember ever seeing this much detail for a suspension.
Yeah, I look, this is going to sound a bit surprising, considering my stance on referees and yada, yada, yada. I actually think the sin bin was enough. Like, the NRL's, I think, is going about the wrong way with how to stamp out referee abuse. Like, yes, this was bad. Sinbin cost Melbourne enough at the time. But, you know, there's so much more concern, like what people are doing. You know, the commentators, for one, I always say that one, the press conferences and the thing, the media, how they run it, I think that needs to be stamped out. They seem to be making an example of Brandon Smith, whereas, yeah, I think Sinbin was enough for it, to be fair. Like, it was a heat of the moment thing. It wasn't like he walked off the field and called him that. It was a heat of the moment thing, and he did it. Like, and I think them going, okay, he's Sinbin, and not talking about it anymore was the way to go. But now they've turned it into a massive thing, and yeah, I'm not a fan.
I'm surprised by that, because one of the key reasons behind all the shoulder charge crackdown, the head high crackdown, safety of the players was thrown out to the public, but an underlying thing was ensuring that when families watch the game, it's a safe game for their kids to play. And all that sort of stuff. And it definitely had a role in those sort of rule decision makings. And I think one of the things here that the NRL and the match review committee or judiciary would have had in mind is the look of the game and how, and with the same sort of concerns, families are watching this. Do we want the young kids watching the players abuse a referee and then get away with it? I think that really came into play here. And I think here it says you've let down the club, so, fans and officials, and they need to show a better example. NRL Council.
I get that, but I don't know about you, but I remember growing up, if you got sin-binned, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Now it's just everyone, here's a sin-bin. You have a sin-bin. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you rarely saw it. And, like, if you, like, I remember when, was it Bill Harrigan did it to Gordon Tallis in Origin? Yeah. It was fucking huge.
Yeah.
And it was a century for the same thing, except Harry Tails was about 2 centimetres away from Harry's face. Mm-hmm. But that was massive. And you know what? I walked away thinking, oh, shit, okay, here we go. This is – I can't remember if he got suspended. I don't think he did. But for me, when I was growing up, Simbin was enough.
Yeah, different game.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like, you know – yeah, I just don't think 3 weeks, considering other shit that went down, like, over the weekend that physically could have hurt people, and Brandon Smith is the one that gets...
Yeah, I don't know if you can... I don't think we can compare grades and charges, because then you're going to get...
No, but my point is that you mentioned it before, safety. Safety for me is a priority over a comment. And, you know, you had what David Clemmer did. You had what Latrell Mitchell did. You had Tarek Sims did. You know, all those. And they're not getting 3 weeks. And this is my issue with it. Brandon Smith called the ref for fucking cheat, which is not okay. He got sin bin for it. You had, well, Tarek Sims only got fined, didn't he? Or did he got suspended?
He got 1 week suspension.
Yeah, 1 week suspension for 2 sin bins in one game for foul play.
Mm-hmm.
You had,
but he also wasn't bringing the game into disrepute through, was that questioning the integrity of an official?
Yeah, but he was trying to, he nearly knocked someone out.
I said, you can't. I don't think you can compare.
Oh, I think
if the coach did something like that in the press conference, we know they're going to get hit with a 20 or a 50 grand fine if they came out and said something like that.
But this is my point. If they just went, okay, sin bin, done that. Let's focus on the guy who shoulder charged someone in the head.
Yeah, but then you can also look at that and say, oh, sweet, I can say whatever the hell I want to the ref and it'll cost me 10 minutes, but there's no real legal effect from it.
I guarantee you, this 3 weeks is going to be hell on earth for Brandon Smith, for one. And coming off that field, even Cooper Cronk was like, I am fearful for what's going to happen to Brandon Smith on Monday when he gets called into that office.
You say
it's only 10 minutes, but that is not 10 minutes for Brandon Smith.
No. I mean, if you didn't have, like, the 3 weeks on the... Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. But
on the other hand, like,
not every player has Craig Bellamy as a coach. So.
For me, what David Clemmer did, and I didn't think it was that bad anyway, was worse than what Brandon did. What Latrell Mitchell did to Dominic Young was worse than what...
when did that happen?
Dominic Young was running towards the try line. My issue, he smacked him around the chin. He got him around the chin. I personally believe Dominic Young took a tad of a dive, but and so did Latrell Mitchell at the time. But then Latrell Mitchell, if you look at the replay, he did smack him over the head, and he would have felt that. Latrell Mitchell picked him off the ground while he was acting unconscious. If he was unconscious and Latrell Mitchell picked him up off the ground, that's horrible. You can't do that. And Dry Arrow. For me, like, that's worse than what Brandon's done. That should be more of a focus. But you know, David Clemmer, Tarek Sims, Latrell Mitchell, and they're the ones I know about over the weekend. All of those incidents combined that's not even the same level of suspension that Brandon Smith got, and that's my issue.
I'm a little surprised with Jared's statements on this one, considering his usual referee slanted support. But
yes,
cool. We'll let you guys make up your own mind. That's judiciary. I'm trying to see if there's anyone else. Oh, we said Tarek Sims 1 week. Is there anyone else that we missed from the weekend? Clemmer, he accepted a fine. We just talked about that.
Yeah. Don't 100% agree with that one.
Nakora, and charged with offences, they'll go fines.
That's another thing that annoyed me about that game, and a reaction to it. So David Clemmer and Keon Kolomatangi started a bit of a dust up. Didn't end up fighting, but they started a bit of a dust up. Mm-hmm. Clemmer got knee in the back, but he definitely shouldn't have started anything. And then the next tackle, they calmed it all down. Next tackle, Davey Moali ran straight at Clemmer. He did raise the elbow while he was running. Clemmer took offense and elbowed him in the head.
Mm.
And that's what Clemmer got sent off. I didn't agree with the send-off, but whatever. It is what it is. He only got fined for it. But Latrell Mitchell actually came in third man and pushed Clemmer over. And that's what started everything again. And this is what I don't agree with. You've got Tarek Sims, Latrell Mitchell, and David Clemmer doing this shit, doing the above-mentioned dump thing and dumping the young Latrell Mitchell did. But Graeme Ennersley this afternoon spent more time ripping into Latrell Mitchell about coming third man in, which, you know, that's a bad thing. I used that as an argument on the weekend talking to Walt. Bad thing. But he's not ripping into the stuff that actually went wrong. So he came in and absolutely eviscerated the referee as well, because he should have been told him he should have been sin bin. And
Latrell Mitchell. Fuck's sake. I didn't watch that game live. I went back and watched that whole sequence that you guys were talking about. I didn't have an issue with any of it. I think like that shit happens almost every tackle. It's just whether it was seen or not. The Clemmer, I don't even think Clemmer elbowed him in the head. I think after the tackle, like he was leaning on his head with his elbow. But an elbow to head to me is like a full raise arm, strike them across.
Yeah, look, I agree he should have been simbid for – he was obviously pissed and uncontrollable at that point.
It's just like putting your hand on someone's face to help yourself get off the ground. That happens.
I think it was an overreaction to send him off. And yeah. I believe the judiciary agreed by only suspending him.
Oh, by only fining him.
Or only fining him, sorry. But, like, and I don't get me wrong, I don't agree with what Latrell Mitchell is doing. But my point is, by Graeme Annesley spending more time on what Mitchell did as opposed to what Sims did and Clemmer did, and spending a lot of time on what Brandon Smith did, they're not focusing on the stuff that needs to be ruled out of the game. They're focusing on the little things that, for me, are just like,
I'm completely on the other side of that.
I don't agree with what Mitchell did, but I'm more worried about David Clemmer next time he does put in the elbow, that it's a lot more damaging, or Latrell Mitchell picking a guy up who's actually legitimately hurt, and it exacerbates that injury even more. I'm more worried about that as opposed to third man in and someone calling the referee what he did.
So I think third man in to me is the biggest issue out of all that, because that's the one that sparks everything up. Or if the NRL had it old school and just let the two players go at it till it's finished, easy.
You know what? That goes back to what you said earlier about people watching the game. But, you know, for me, the biggest issue this day and age is what Mitchell did by picking Dominic Young up while he's laid out on the ground. Like, like I said, Dom Young, I believe, played possum a bit, which I do not agree with at all. It shouldn't have been a penalty. He was affecting the try-saving tackle, but he did cop him high. But there's no way for Mitchell to know that Dom Young was not hurt.
Yeah.
And on the ground, and he picked him up to try and get him to play the ball instead of costing a penalty. And Latrell Mitchell turned around and said, what was I supposed to do? You know what? Fair call, mate. What are you supposed to do? But you stopped. You could have used your head and gone, you know what? If he's legitimately injured, let's not pick him up and make the injury worse.
Well, you just said before the heat of the moment thing with Brandon Smith with the comment. I think you'd have to say the same thing here, wouldn't you?
Well, no, because the referee already blew the whistle.
Yeah, but saying that heat of the moment trumps that. Like, hear the whistle, you're not going to react to it.
But, look, I just don't see...
I'm watching it now. So I was pretty off. Yeah, that shits me what Dom Young. Yeah, because his team had the advantage by playing fast, by staying down. Yeah, you're going to get a penalty, but you've lost all that momentum.
I know, and that's my point. And I don't agree with Dom Young staying down, but it's worse what Latrell Mitchell does try to pick him up.
The other thing we don't know is whether Dom Young's saying something at this stage.
I don't think if he's playing for a penalty, he's talking too much.
Yeah. I see your point, but that one, it was pretty obvious I was watching and wasn't concussed.
It doesn't matter, though. Like, you could have a broken jaw. You could have a broken neck. Like, Latrell Mitchell, he says it himself. Like, he's pretty bloody powerful. If he comes along and coat hangers you, Dom Young's actually lucky he wasn't hurt more from that tackle.
It's one thing that's creeping the game, though, that I don't like. It's players that are injured, not playing the ball and keeping their team on the advantage, but stopping it completely.
I know. I tell you what, Dom Young, with his size and speed and agility, I hope you got in trouble for that. Not because he got injured, laid down for a penalty, but because he should have beaten Latrell Mitchell one-on-one. Yeah, he
should have scored that.
Yeah, that's what's... It's probably the most disappointing part about that.
All right, because let's move.
If you actually seen the bloke, he's a big fella. Yeah, and he's quick.
Let's jump onto the games themselves. So all pretty high scoring. At least one team high scoring in each game. Sharks 28 over the Storm 6. Now, the week before this, the Storm went down to Manly 36-30. And in the first half, they were completely lackluster. It came back in the second half and really fired up. This week, they were lackluster for the entire game. That's not a small scoreline. And the fact that they've let in 36 points and then 28 points in back-to-back weeks. Is the shine starting to rub off Melbourne a little bit?
Look, I don't think so. I think if anyone can pull back, it is Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
That where Roosters are right now, I think Roosters are a higher chance of slipping compared to Melbourne. But you know, Melbourne are Melbourne, dude. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm just throwing the question out there. I didn't say I
think so.
What's the word? I know, looking at some of the defeats that Melbourne have had this year it's not concerning, but there's definitely a trend that's different to usual. Like they've been beaten 32-6 by Penrith and then followed that up by getting beaten 36-6 by Cowboys. And it's not like they were losing 20-14 or something. They're pretty decent margins, and then you've had 36 points put on you by Manly, who haven't been really a threatening team the last few weeks, and then 28 points by the Sharks, who have ran them back into some form, we'll say. I don't remember a Storm team having this many points put on them consistently through a season. Usually, when this many points is put on them, they tighten it up pretty quickly. I don't know whether it's the disruption during the origin period or a lack of consistency with regards to selections due to injuries. There just seems to be something a little different at the moment.
I'm not worried about score lines, like you said. I'm worried about what we talked earlier with Brendan Smith. Like, barring old mate who King hit someone back in like 2005, I can't remember his name. I actually don't remember a Melbourne player. Well, maybe Battle of Brookvale with Adam Blair being that out of character.
Well, that's just like, Brandon Smith, though. I think that's just always been part of his game.
I've never seen that out of him.
I'm not going to call him a grub, but he definitely runs his mouth.
Yeah, yeah, but not to that point. Like, he's probably cheeky, but not that. Sledgehammer like. I'm more worried about that. Like in history, when Melbourne have lost like that, they've still stayed in control. But that's an out of control, like loss of control moment for one of their top players, which is very rare for Melbourne.
Yeah, when you're saying the control thing, I don't think they've been in control of any of the matches where they've been really pushed around. Like, they've been pushed around before, but not as consistently through a season as this.
Not control of the game, per se.
Yeah, no, control of themselves, control of their emotions.
Yeah, that's kind of stuff. Like Munster for me is a fucking silk when he loses, he kicks people. But like that's happened a few times. But I've just never seen. You very rarely see from a Melbourne player something so blatantly out of control of them. And I'm more concerned about that than the scoreline.
Or are you concerned about how it got to that?
Yeah, like, you know, Melbourne famously have lost 40-0 in a grand final against Manly. There you go, Adam. And none of their players did that kind of stuff because they knew it was within themselves is why they're losing. Like, this is...
Yeah, but that 40-0 was like a blip on that season, like a complete out-of-nowhere scoreline in that season. They're leaking points this year like they haven't in...
If there was any time for you to lose emotional control, it'd be a grand final losing 40-0.
Yeah, that's not the point I'm making. I'm just saying this is not, we haven't seen the Storm ever do this. Not that I can remember. And Bellamy's usually turned them around by now. And this is the second time this season where they've had back-to-back games where they've been pretty much smoked.
I'm still expecting late year surge.
Yeah, so I'm just saying this.
I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Smith's out there training right now, to be fair. He's probably doing a lot of coach.
I think at this stage, what he's brought to the field for the Storm this year, they're not that upset that he's leaving compared to this time last year.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
And someone made the point at the Roosters, they're getting this guy. I was like, yep, but it's still better than anything the Roosters have got. So,
good question. I have a high opinion of Sam Verrills. I really do. I'm a bit worried about that. I thought Parramatta would push for Verrills before Hodgson, but, you know, that's by the by.
All right, Knights 28, Rabbitohs 40.
Overall.
Sorry?
A lot of long-range tries.
Yeah.
South, Latrell and Cody were too classy for him. Great to see Jaden Brayley back. There was a moment in the game where Latrell made an awesome break. He set up Burgess, passed it to Nick Arima to get past Tex Hoy, and Dom Young just came from nowhere and tackled him. The next play, South dropped the ball. Tyson Frizzell ran up, made a break about 70 metres, passed it to Tex Hoy, who got tackled. And then Dom Young, who made the try-saving tackle at the other end, actually ended up scoring in the
other
goal. It was fantastic footy to watch. I don't care. It wasn't even me as a Newcastle fan. It was just me as a footy fan. Like, this looked good.
That's really what you want to see. And he's really grown. He's really blossomed this year. And hopefully it continues to go through the season. I did send Jared a message saying, I wish Cody Walker would do something. That's after he had 3 try assists already, after Jared bagged him earlier this year.
I started abusing people.
Yeah, Walker does that. He pulls games like that out. That's just what he does. Tigers 20, Eels 28. This obviously not as close as the recent Monday clash, but... Tigers, I think, got closer than a number of people were expecting. And Eels continue to do their loss the week before, won this week trajectory. So don't bet on them next week. There you go. I'm with you, Jared. I'm on that trend now. And there's talks with regards to an extension for Mitch Moses' contract coming up to try and extend before other clubs are able to speak with him. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on if you are an Eels fan. They continue to pick up their points. West Tigers competitive at times. It has led to some interesting changes for round 18, and we'll get to that in the round 18 preview show later in the week. But it's another loss to compound what has been a dismal season. And then the round wrapped up with the Broncos 32 defeating the Dragons 18. And
there goes my bet.
Oh, I was going to say, from Walt's comments, Dragons were their own worst enemy in this one with regards to ball control and just control around the park. What do you say? If Hunt was playing, this would be a different story. They just needed someone to take control and they didn't have that person.
I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't have the tickets that Walt has on Hunt. So
I'm so surprised. Broncos picking up another win through the origin period. It hasn't generally been their strongest time of the year. But outside of the loss to the Cowboys in Townsville, I don't think they've dropped one in quite a while. In front of us, still a healthy crowd of 30,000. Delos Hoyta getting across the line for a double. Staggs getting across the line for a double. Mam continuing his very strong season as well, getting across the line. And Tessie New, who will be fullback probably for round 18 as well, with Tamari Martin Gornsby's. So Broncos 16, Dragons 12 at halftime. Broncos doubled their halftime score, whereas Dragons only put on one try after halftime. This is, of course, with Tariq Sims having two sim bins in the first 25 minutes. So Dragons playing half of the first half with 12 men. Obviously not going to be conducive to a win. All right, there's our wrap-up of round 17. We're going to have a quick break and we'll be back with State of Origin 3 preview. Okay, so the decider. 1-1 heading to Suncorp Stadium tomorrow night, 8:10 kickoff. Easiest one to tip. Oh. The easiest game to tip for me for the series because of the Bluey episode that we've talked about previously called The Decider. Maroons winning that one after the Blues' strong start. So that's exactly what's going to happen. New South Wales will get away to a lead. Queensland will come back and win. And, yeah, Bluey's already said that's what's going to happen.
So the two big news coming out of this one was that Jordan McLean was picked. And he had a strained quad and actually got ruled out. I actually felt really bad for him for that. Like, he's 30-year-old, played 14 games for Australia, finally gets picked for New South Wales and gets quad injury. I don't care if you rate him or not. That's just a bad day for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then the big news, which, you know, in my opinion, evens the game out a little bit more. Cameron Munster and Murray Tulagi have actually been ruled out for COVID. Jacob Saifidi replaces Jordan McLean. I should have mentioned that. Cameron Munster, Tom Dearden comes in for Cam Munster for Queensland, and Corey Oates comes in for Murray Tulagi for Queensland. The reason I believe it evens it out because at the start of the series, New South Wales lost their biggest attacking threat in Tom Trbojevic. And for me, Queensland had an advantage throughout the whole series without him there. And as Adam admitted before the podcast, if Trbojevic was there for the first game, this would not be a decider. This would be a dead rubber game at Suncorp Stadium because Trbojevic is worth more than 6 points in an origin game. And now, because first game heroics, superstar Cam Munster's been ruled out, there goes your attacking friend. So, you know, New South Wales are at a disadvantage the entire series. Now it's a bit more even.
And that's all total bullshit. But anyway, they weren't at a disadvantage. Still, if you've got the better team, you're not at a disadvantage in Numpty.
But we could have been better.
Yeah. You've still got the advantage, so there's no disadvantage. But anyway, I don't consider losing a player if they were out before the series started. It wasn't right before, it was a couple of weeks before anyway. That's like saying Queensland lost Welch for the series.
Hey, all I'm saying is you literally just said, and what Wall reckons that he, if Ben Hunt was there, we wouldn't have won. So if a Queensland player is already saying that about his domestic team, you know, I can say it about Origin. He said Ben Hunt was there on Sunday.
Yeah, no, it was that we lost their player. I was like, no, you didn't. They just weren't there to start.
If Ben Hunt was there on Sunday, they would have lost the Broncos. If Trbojevic was there in the first game, we would have won.
Yeah. And Billy Slater and Cam Smith are playing for Queensland, we would have won. There we go. We're even.
Yeah, but they're retired. That's irrelevant.
Tom Dearden's come in, and when we first heard out about Munster and Tulagi being out, we were putting together our 1-17s. It was pretty much two options. You slot Hunt at 5'8", and Harry Grant plays the whole game, and you bring an interchange player on into 14. My option was Brimson, because he's done that exact same role before and did it well at Origin level, and he's done it. He's not going to be overawed by a decider. Or you bring in Dearden, who's been in the squad for the series, and reward that him in his good form. Whether he comes off as 14 or starts at 6, we were unsure at that stage. Were there any other combinations thrown out by us that you can remember?
No, it's just... Yeah, that was the only ones. I honestly believe it would just be Dearden at 6 and Hunt and Grant rotating.
Yeah, and that because that worked really well in game one and was part of Queensland's best period in game two, was having Hunt and Grant in that rotation. It's a massive, like, to me, this evens out the halves battle. Basically, based on Dearden's lack of experience, I think that was one of the areas where Queensland had the advantage, was in the balance of the halves, because Cleary carries Luai quite a bit, in my opinion anyway. And Munster's the more established, well, not more established half, but the better half out of Cherry Evans and him, but the gap between the two of them is not as great as the gap between Luai and Cleary.
Can we just... spend a bit of time on the two blokes that have come in. So last year, Tom Dearden was rejected by a team and told he could go somewhere else by a team who lost 14 games in a row.
We also say from a team that hasn't been very good with regards to talent.
Retention.
And identification.
And then he came up to the Cowboys
No, I was just saying at the time for the Broncos. Yeah, done
came
since.
Up to the Cowboys, and you know he had a pretty decent back end of the last year, but this year's absolutely killed it. Doing really, really well. And you know, as a New South Wales fan, I'm going to say later in the thing that, you know, New South Wales need to run at him all day because he's not the strongest defensively and the most weight behind him. But saying that too, I'm very happy this guy's getting a debut because pretty sure at the start of the year, I know I said it, especially I was struggling to fit him in the 7.
Yeah, I didn't have him in mind.
Yeah. And Todd Payton's come in. He's done an amazing job for him. And really, really good. And then on the other side, you got Corey Oates, who I believe was screwed over by coaches, personally. And if you remember his story, he was walk on a Queensland winger for a couple of years straight, killing it. And there's always rumours about him wanting to play second row. And Bennett just came out and went, no, you're a winger, mate. Pull your head in. You're going to stay in your flank and you're going to do well, play with it. But then when Anthony Seibold came on board, I'm pretty sure the first meeting, he's like, mate, I want to play second row. Anthony Seibold just went, look, we'll put you in there. We'll train you a bit. We'll see how you go. And for me, that's when his form completely and utterly dropped off, in my opinion. And then he ended up in reserve a few times. And, He's focused on trying to be second role when he's definitely a winger. And then Kevin Walters was kind of doing the same thing, but then I think he got a tap from the shoulder and went, put him on the wing. And now he's been killing it. One of the reasons Broncos have done so well this year. And yeah, he deserves his spot back as far as I'm concerned. Really, I'm very happy for him, to be fair. So it's really, really good couple of stories there to play footy, play Origin footy again.
Yeah, and we're going to see. Sorry about that audio there. I don't know what Jared's doing. He's on his phone, but it sounds like he's moving around a lot. Cut it out.
Sorry.
But anyway, I'm just looking at Dearden's defensive statistics. We may as well look at that. So he's made 240 tackles so far this season in 15 games, missing 28 of those. So if you're a math guru, that's not me. I'm just going to have a play around with some numbers here because I'm just comparing that to the year before where he made 274 tackles, so 34 more tackles in three less games, but also missed 43 compared to 28 in three less games. So he's doing less work defensively this year, but making the majority of his tackles. I'm not too concerned with his defensive skill set, mainly based on the fact that he's playing in the second best defensive team in the comp this year in the Cowboys. And teams really haven't worked out, outside of a couple of weeks here and there, how to consistently score against them. I'm not too concerned because what he's got is attitude and determination. He doesn't shy away from the contact. He'll at least put his body on the line. And while that doesn't always get the job done, it goes a long way to getting the job done and does make the defensive players around him, makes their job easier if at least he's holding his position and putting his body where it should be. So I'm not really that concerned about it. It's the same to me if Queensland running at Luai or running at who was the previous 5'8 there, Cody Walker, when he had a crack. Maloney. Yeah. Anyone like that?
See, for me, I'm not individually. Oh, sorry. For years and years, Queensland and the Broncos, like Lockyer wasn't strong defensively. No. He put his body on the line, I'll give it to you. But what Wayne Bennett did for, you know, Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, when Lockie was playing, was that he put Dane Carlaw, Brad Vaughan, Tony Carroll right next to Darren Lockyer to protect him.
Yeah.
In this game, you've got Jeremiah Nanai, you've got Kirk Capewell, and you've got Val Holmes, which is, you know, not a bad thing to have, but Dane Gagai has missed 18 tackles in two games. I'm not.
He plays on the different side.
Well, no. But my point is that Tom Dearden by himself this year has tackled a 90% efficiency rate. The last year was 86%. As Adam just.
So his efficiency rate this year was 86. His efficiency rate last year was 64. So he's actually improved quite a lot.
Righto. Point is that for me, it's not individual, it's unit. I'm happy about as a New South Wales fan. Not defending well last game, and you've been a guy, decider at Suncorp, and you don't have to be rocket scientists to know that in the middle, Queensland are quite strong. You've got Carrigan, Papali, Fasimawali. It's going to be hard to get through, but if you can make a slight dent in that middle, and then go attacking the edges, New South Wales are going to do really, really well.
I'd almost be tempted to swap Capewell and Gilbert around.
Yeah, look, that's not a bad idea. But, you know,
it's pretty going it's up. Hard task to run through Gilbert the way that he's been playing this year.
These young fellas, and you know, this is where legends are made, this origin. But this is where young fellas create their reputation. They're coming up against, who are they coming up against here? They're coming against Cam Murray.
Liam Martin.
And Angus Crichton.
It's not an all-star team, but it's better.
To a point, Talakai. So I'd say Murray and Crichton, the ones I'm talking about here, you're talking up against hardened veterans. That's who they're going to go up against. So good on Queensland for bringing in this young talent, but coming up against guys like that who've literally done everything in the game, fucking hell, it's going to be a hard ask.
Yeah, but in saying that, they come up against these guys weekly anyway. They'll be fine.
Yeah, but not. See, people say that, and I don't necessarily agree with it because you're putting the best of the best on the same field. Like,
no, I'm not. I'm just talking like one-on-one defensive reads or one tackle at a time.
But the thing is, it's not one-on-one defense. It's, as I said, it's a unit. Like, if you rely on one-on-one defensive reads in an Origin game, you're in a lot of trouble.
No, I mean, sorry, I should have rephrased. Like, one, if you break it down to one tackle at a time, and not one-on-one tackle at a time, just one tackle. So, say Murray's running the ball and he's going at Did, and if his player from the inside assists him, the player on the outside makes the right read and stays out, and they get the tackle made. That's what they're doing week in, week out anyway. Yeah. I'm not so much worried about New South Wales, whoever's running at him. I'm, from a Queensland point of view, it's the communication and getting that up to speed quickly. And I don't think that'll be a huge issue because he's been in camp for the entire games.
I'm not overly worried about that part. The communication will be there. If the question will be if they can do that in the 50th to the 80th minute. If the communication be there when they're absolutely cooked. That's my question.
Yeah. Because neither team's done that over both games yet, which is going to be interesting.
Last game, Queensland, when they were cooked, didn't handle it.
No. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Sorry.
No, keep going. I was just going to tell everyone what Wall's opinion was in this game.
Yeah, I'm interested to see whether the influx of – oh, not influx, it's only two. The inclusion of two debutants has any similar reaction to the influx of debutants it had in game one. I think the difference there was – because they were playing in Sydney, you had all these debutants coming in. It was more of a, they're not going to say it publicly, but there might have been a there's nothing to lose sort of attitude with the debutants coming in. Like, we're not expected to do much. We're on debut. We're in Sydney. Yeah, we've been selected based on our form. We finally made it to Origin. Let's just get out there and rip in. And I think it really did take New South Wales by surprise in that in game one. Whether there might be a little bit of that based on the home field advantage with Gilbert and Didden coming in, and whether that is the boost that the rest of the squad needs after such a poor performance in game two. It could have something there. I don't think it's going to be as big a factor as it was in game one, but it could be there. For New South Wales, Jack Wyden was available for selection in this one. He's been selected as 18th man with Matt Burton and Stephen Crichton both retaining their centre positions. Thoughts on that selection?
Look, I thought Wyden would come in for Crichton.
Me too.
Look, it's hard to justify. And the reason Wyden lost his spot in game two was COVID. But it's hard to justify changing a team that's not unforced.
I don't think. You game one, 40, man the match.
44-10 victory. It's hard to change it. And, for me, Fittler's just going, you know what? Pembroke right now are very, very hard to beat. Let's get as many of them as possible in that team.
We need to take out Burton.
were. You want to explain that properly and go why I believe he can fit in that little mold, little justification. I just want, you want to go over that one for a second, mate?
In Burton?
Yes.
Well, you just said Penrith.
Yeah. Explain why I think it's all right to have Burton there.
He used to play for Penrith.
For his entire life. He's played more time at Penrith. No, look, I don't think...
And he had a good 10 minutes. Got to give him that.
I don't think Fittler's too would be too
concerned.
I don't think he'd be too keen to change an Origin team that won by 40 points. Hmm. And I think that's as simple as it was. If it was closer, I think bringing Jack Whiten in the team would have been justified. But having as many Penrith boys in that squad, I think that's the reason that Crichton saved him.
That Whiten, you've come around on Penrith, haven't you?
Well, you can't stop what they're saying. I have my opinions about their individuals. I've never doubted it clear. No, but like you know what I mean.
I'm just playing with you.
No, but you can't deny that.
No. I brought up as a discussion point. I can see both sides of the argument. I can see there's no reason splitting up a winning team. I can see it from the point of view of Whiten's been there, done that, and showed what he can do in game one. And to me, as an overall player, he offers more than Crichton does. But you can also say that, yeah, you don't want to break up a team that put on such a dominant performance in the second game. I found this... I said, I think the word before the series started, that it was going to be intriguing or interesting, and it was going to play out differently to what we've seen in the past. And I really think it has. There hasn't, despite the scoreline in the second game, this has been two games of individual performances rather than either team outdoing the other team as a whole.
I think. Dude, are we starting this again?
No, because in game one, it was the Holmes, Munster, Carrigan, and to a lesser extent, Sherry Evans show. And the rest of Queensland didn't... Oh, sorry, in Cotter, I guess. But the rest of Queensland didn't do a hell of a lot. Like Collins, Papali, Katewell, Nanai. I can't remember who the bench was at that stage. The second game, Tedesco, Cleary... And then to a lesser extent, Trbojevic and Haas did the same, and the rest of the team was okay. I don't remember an Origin series like this where there was individuals in each team that stood so far above the rest of the team.
2005 game three.
Yeah, but that how long ago was that? Like even in the 8 years of dominance for Queensland, even in the 8 years of dominance for Queensland, where you had your Smith, your Cronks, your Thurstons, etc., they did their job, but it was few and far between where one or two of them completely outdid the rest of the team, and that the squad, it was well known for the rest of the players in the Queensland squad. Not the rest, but there were a large number that weren't always going to be your elite players. They got in there and they were noticeable without being match winners, if that makes sense. Whereas there's been players on both sides in both games where you've like, oh shit, yeah, that guy played. I don't even remember him touching the ball. Or like Junior Paulo running for 30 meters and then Papali doing the same thing. Just being complete non-factors in a match where you expect everyone to put in at the level that they've been playing through the year. And I think that's what game three is going to come down to. If either team can get the entire team's performance lifted while having one or two players also have like your man of the match games. Cause I don't think either team's done that yet. And it's, I don't remember that happening.
I 100% disagree with that assessment.
Yeah, but you're a lot more biased opinion, though.
No,
it's not. I still think Newcastle are a good team.
There's nothing to do with bias or anything like that. I went through it last time. I really don't think you're giving the credit to the entire New South Wales team, probably minus Talakai.
Martin.
They I really don't Paulo, think you are.
Cook. Coruscant. I'll give Burton his 15 minutes of fame. 2-0, sorry, 2-0 had a good game. I'll give it that.
But see the thing about Origin that is against what you're saying right now, it's the 15 minutes, because it's only 3 games and we both know what 15 minutes can do in a rugby league game that matter. So that 15 minutes can make you a legend.
No, it can't.
And that's glory. That, yes, it can.
The miracle try for Queensland. The try itself's the legend. The player's not a legend. It was just the last player.
Yeah, right. Okay. So what do you remember from? What's the biggest highlight for Darren Lockyer in Origin for you? The charge down, Brad Fittler, the charge down. Darren Lockyer. Brad Fittler, the charge down. Darren Lockyer, the drop ball from Brett Hodson. Andrew Johns is the entire 2005 series.
Yeah, but that moment for Lockyer doesn't make Lockyer a legend. He had an entire career that made him a legend.
But the point is, 2006, that what changed the team, that try. And that's the biggest highlight from, you know, if you're going to relive Darren Lockyer's highlights, that'll get relived about 5 times, that moment. It's the moments in Origin that make that matter. And all of the
that moments matter.
But that's my point. Like, the moment that someone creates a try that wins you the game, he can't do anything. He might not do anything for the entire game, but that moment will create him a legend. And that's the reality of it. Like, if tomorrow night goes down to the last minute and Jerome Luai comes up with something brilliant that just breaks the game completely open, and no matter what you and me think about it, him as a player, that's going to create a legend out of
Jerome Luai. That, yeah, in a game like that, it will, if it's a 44-10 blowout.
But that's my point. Yeah. No, but that's my point. Like, in a 44-10 blowout, as I said last podcast or whatever it was, you know, you've got a team, 2 teams going at each other, best of the best players. That big of a thing needs to have more credit. It's not an outlier. It needs to have more credit to the entire 17 about the complete and utter domination of them. It's not individual efforts when someone wins 44-0. 44-10. It's entire team domination. And there's a difference to what I was saying just then. In close games, it's the moments. In big floggings, it's the team.
Meh.
Nah.
Meh.
Whatever.
To me, looking at tomorrow night, it's 1-1 and either of these 2 teams can win.
Yeah, so Wolf sent his predictions through, talking about that. Okay, so he's got 2 scenarios. If Ben Hunt starts at 6, I'll get it up.
That's Jared breathing that you can hear, by the way, everyone. So.
Ben Hunt's chance to silence the critics around not being a game, big game player. Also a chance to right his wrong to the 2015 grand final. And also he'll win Wowie Lewis and Dalia medals this year. So, but Wolf's putting his money where his mouth is. He's got $10 on Ben Hunt to win the Wowie Lewis medal. That's going at $151. So he's going to win $1,500 tomorrow night. If Ben Hunt wins the Wowie Lewis medal.
There's only really one player in the running for that right now, isn't there?
So, yeah, Teddy. There's only, but in saying that too, that will only happen if he gets the 6th jersey and Hunt comes on. So, if Dean comes on the 14 as a floater.
Yeah.
And Green plays 80 at hooker. If it goes in while we're expecting it with Hunt to play nine, Grant come off the bench, Hunt to float when that happens, didn't play the 80 minutes at six. New South Wales 24-10. That's what Wall reckons. So it's
I still wouldn't be surprised if didn't start at 14. So it, like you look back at Queensland, Slater was in both of these teams. Cronk spent more than a few seasons at 14 and coming off the bench. Cherry Evans came off the bench at 14. They both played at lock. So
wait a minute. Wait. Hold up for a second, though. Who were they behind?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that halves can come off 14 and just slot in the forwards. Because Cherry Evans played his first couple of Origin games as lock.
It was fantastic by Meninga because Cronk was behind Thurston and Lockyer.
Yeah.
And Cherry Evans was behind Cronk and Cherry.
So the two better players started.
Yeah, integrated into the competition, which, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. And Slater was in the middle of that.
Yeah.
For me, tomorrow night, personally, look, I love him, but Grant's had limited game time over the last 2 months. He's had a lot of he's played a couple Origins, a couple NRL games, but despite his fitness, I don't think he's fully, hardened. And this is my point against Dearden starting at 14. As Adam said earlier, Grant and Hunt's rotation through the middle has been the shining light for Queensland, other than Cotter and Munster. And I very highly doubt that they will change that too much. And I don't think they're going to bring a 22-year-old off the bench. I think they're going to get him in the game as soon as possible. But as I said, I was speaking to Adam before the podcast, and we'll probably get into it a bit more now. Cherry and Ponga have to play the best games in Origin they ever have, because the entire game, I wouldn't even be getting Dearden to pass the football. I'd just be telling him to run the entire game. Like, do what Fittler did for Cleary for that first couple of years. Just let him just ease into the game and pick his moments when he needs to. I'd let Cherry and Ponga deal with a ball playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'd just say to him, just do what you've been doing for the Cowboys.
Which is essentially that.
Yeah. The Munster blueprint, just minus like the 20 kilos of extra mass that Munster has, just run the ball.
And his ability to outthink other teams. But yeah, like Ponga's probably been, for once, the most under-talked about player in this whole scenario, I'd say. Everyone's talking about Hunt, Dearden and Grant, Cherry, but Ponga has got the most try assists out of everyone, or both sides, I'd say. Close to, anyway. In the first two games, he's been very, very safe under the high ball. He's done everything right for Queensland this year. I think I think he's the key to Queensland winning tomorrow night, to be fair. I think without him, like if they didn't have him, I'd be very, very concerned about their ability to score points.
I like the fact of Nanai starting as opposed to coming off the bench. I think it showed in the first two games he was wasted being a bench player. I would like Gilbert starting over Catewell and having that. I think Catewell's just a better bench player than a starter just in general.
You've always said that, yeah.
Yeah, we've said that since he started. We said that when he was at Cronulla, but anyway. Man of the match, Papali has to be. He saved up the last 6 weeks of doing nothing for one game. look at his stats, man. Like, even for Canberra, he has not been a factor. I've already done my tip based on Bluey. Queensland will win. Score-wise, don't care.
Oh, I think New South Wales, if they can survive the first 15, if they can score a try in the first 15 minutes and double that Queensland crowd, I think it could be another blowout. Either way, I think New South Wales win. just because I love him and I really, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I want Cam Murray to get man of the match and James Tedesco for Wally Lewis medal.
Yeah, I think Tedesco's got quite a lead on that one.
So it came up this week. Are you still pushing for Cherry to be Australian captain this year, or does Teddy get it now? Are you agreeing with Teddy being captain for Australia?
Who's the incumbent captain? Cherry Evans?
No, Cordner. They haven't played a game since Cordner was
captain. Yeah, true.
Do you think it's outright at this point?
Oh, no, I don't think it's anywhere close to outright. No way. Tedesco's only been a captain for 2 years. Cherry's been one for close to 10. How Tedesco plays showcases that quite a bit, but there's been few captains at fullback, or captains at fullback, I should say, a few and far between, but Tedesco is a different talent to what we've seen there. I think Mao will look at it.
Does it come down to tomorrow night?
No, I don't think it does at all. I think it comes down to the squad that Mao picks for the World Cup. Is he picking that squad solely to win the World Cup, or is he picking that squad to win the World Cup and move forward for the next 2 years? Because I think because we haven't had international test matches for a couple of years.
In both scenarios, Teddy's the captain.
No, I think he's younger than you. I know. If he's picking solely for the World Cup and he's saying, this is a squad we're picking, and he goes to Cherry, this will be your kind of hurrah, I guess, as an Australian player, because we've got Cleary there and he'll be the future and or even present, depending on which way he goes. He'll be the captain and Tedesco will take it over for the next era of Kangaroos. If he's picking the squad now and for the future and doesn't see himself making really any changes over the next year, 2 years, which where we hope we'll have more test matches, then I think he'll go Tedesco. But I don't see any reason why you'd take... Has Cherry captained Australia before when Cordner hasn't been there?
No.
If he's been injured or anything? No, okay. That's interesting.
I don't think so.
I just think Cherry's got more runs on the board overall, like experience-wise. Well, Tedesco's had a couple of premierships. He wasn't captain at the time.
All I can say, well, I don't think Cherry's won a premiership as captain.
No, I'm just saying either. It's just an experience factor.
My only thing to that is that Teddy's spot is one of the few in the Australian team that's actually concrete in.
Mm.
There's no one coming in for his fullback spot at all.
Uh-huh.
And Cherry's isn't.
That's fair.
That's my biggest thing for that. And yeah, I'd say Tedesco. I think Tedesco would have won more Origin series as captain than Cherry. I'm pretty sure Tedesco's at least two or three, where Cherry's only one.
Uh-huh.
He's played in more grand finals. He's
so you go on games one, it's not even gonna be a contest.
Yeah, well, but what you could say if Cherry is games one off his bat would be more on Cherry, because Tedesco's, you know, while he carries the Roosters, he's played in a better team over the years than what Cherry has. Look, it's a debate. I think Tedesco's a lock, and tomorrow night will be a big test. But as Wol said, for Hunt, I actually think tomorrow night is Cherry Evans' biggest game of his career, because he is the clear leader for that Queensland squad. I said Ponga's like their biggest attacking threat and the key, but to lead and to come back after getting beaten 44-10 at Suncorp, losing Cam Munster, your halves partner, Cherry Evans has got a really good opportunity here to cement his legacy in the World of Rugby League. If he lifts the shield tomorrow night, it is massive for his career. Like, that is just...
It'll be the second biggest Origin victory he's had.
Oh, I'd say the biggest, to be fair.
Oh, the like, team that he won with last time was worse than this one.
No, no, but he had Munster there.
Mm.
They did get belted the second game. Yeah. But, oh, no, this team, you know, he's got a rookie coach. You know, last time when they, in 2020, when they
Paul won, Green, didn't they?
No, they
was that Wayne Bennett? That's right, he came in.
Yeah. And they put it down to Wayne Bennett. Like, it was all on Wayne Bennett. Tomorrow night, it won't be on Slater. It'll be on Cherry. Like, yeah.
No, I 100%. I keep saying Blazer. Not 100%, but I agree with that a long way. The thing that will go away. Yeah, no, because there's other, these are external, or not external factors, but there's factors that will go along with that. Cherry Evans outplayed Cleary in game one. Cleary outplayed Cherry Evans in game two. To me, the biggest difference, game one, Queensland's pressure on Cleary was consistent and from the get-go, and then it was non-existent in game two. Same thing happened the other way around. There was no pressure on Cherry Evans in game one, whereas New South Wales were all over him in game two, forcing him to make poor kicks, poor decisions. Same thing Cleary did in game one. And both halves have had a forward pack that moved forward for them to play behind, and both halves have had a forward pack that went nowhere, and it really affected what they could do. So while I do agree that Cherins is the out-and-out leader of the Queensland squad, and he'll do his best to, well, he'll try his hardest, doing his best, trying his hardest are two different things. But whichever forward pack here lays the platform, because we've seen the impact it's had over the first two games and the difference in performance of both halves. So even if Queensland's forwards don't dominate but hold their own, I agree, his long-distance kicking game has to be on point. If he goes for a 40-20, he has to nail it. There's no point of it pulling up a metre or 2 metres short. Any chance where there's an attacking kick, if they don't score, there has to be a repeat set. He can't let New South Wales off the hook. All those little things that are in his control, he has to nail.
My concern for Cherry is that, and you've said this before, when Trbojevic is out, he tries too hard and he makes dumb shit errors.
At least he's not doing that. At least he's not doing that for Manly anymore now, because the rest of the teams worked out how to play.
He legit has a history of it. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a knock on him, because you can always tell Cherry cares. Like, that's all he's done his entire career. He's cared about the
result. You're never going to question his effort.
No, yeah, that's right. But hard and fast of it is that, like, it's an issue when he does do that, because he overplays his head a lot. And tomorrow night, as we discussed earlier, there are big moments in Origin, man, because there's only three games. If he doesn't play the hand correctly that he's dealt and put that ball over the line in someone else's hand or his own hand, and he overplays it to a point where it's a fuck up.
That's exactly what I just said.
Yeah. That's what we will be remembered. And it's really unfortunate that a career will be remembered. But that's what Origin is. So it's going to be really good to see. Look, as a New South Wales fan, I hope he fucks up. As a football fan, I hope, you know, I hope his reputation for all he's done in the game is not ruined because of this game, because it's so big for him.
And the advantage Cleary and Luai have is their youth.
Got another 10 years left.
Yeah. So if they screw up this one and lose it off their bat the other way, there's a much higher chance that they'll be back next year and the year after and the year after.
And that's the cool
have cracks there. Yeah.
And I've already seen a few jokes about it. Cherry is close to being the Mitchell Pearce of Queensland. You don't want that moniker.
Completely different style, I think. Anyway, the difference here is, and I can say this one, anyone who was coming in after a succession of Lockyer, Kronk, Thurston, was not going to be able to do what they did. And he happened to be the person. And
Wait, hold up. That's exactly what Pierce had to deal with. He came in after Pierce.
You're talking about Pierce at Origin level.
No, that's what I said. He'll be the Pierce of Queensland.
The rest of my point is while Pierce was playing club and like coming up through the club, right, he was also playing Origin that whole time as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas Cherry Evans played like 8 years of club before he got a crack at Origin because of...
Yeah. But like what your point was that he was never going to be able to repeat what...
His first taste was at a mature age already at like 28 or something when he made his debut as the halfback after all that sustained success.
And it was harder on Pierce because he came in at 21 right as 2006 happened.
Yeah, but he had like all that time. Like it was his team if he...
It was thrown in too early.
Yeah, he was, and that's not on him. But what I was trying to say is like his Origin and club career were kind of like parallel, and there was no... Once he was in, and that was it as he developed. It was just a different kind of intro. And when Cherry Evans first got picked, he was the bench player and he came on as a forward, except for that, I think, third game when Kronk was out.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I see what you said, but I think you'd have to lose a couple more before there'd be a Pierce.
To wrap it up, Pong is the key. Cherry's biggest game of his career. New South Wales have the game to lose. Essentially, they've got to be favourites with Munster out, so they've got to be able to rise to that occasion at Suncorp. Adam's picked Queensland to win just because of a cartoon. Wally's picked New South Wales.
Don't dismiss to win. That. Come on.
I didn't dismiss it. I was saying it as a point. Wally's picked New South Wales to win if Hunt starts a hooker, Queensland to win and Hunt to get the Wally Lewis medal and the Dally M off the back of that if... Hunt starts at 5'8", which if that happens, if Hunt gets the Wally Lewis medal, Wally gets $1,500 and he's taking us all out to drinks. You've heard it here first. And I have picked New South Wales to score in the first 15 minutes, double the Queensland crowd and put 20 points at least ahead of Queensland.
You're going then to win. Oh, you're going 23 points ahead.
20 points ahead. At least.
Right. And Queensland love. All right, bench. Yeah, I was just interested. I was just, when you brought up the Pierce thing, so I was just having a look at what the...
Jesus Christ.
Results.
Hey, it's nearly bedtime. I've got to get up tomorrow.
So, yeah, he's played in 18 games, 1-9, lost 9.
Yeah.
So far. One win.
All right, guys. We don't know when we'll get the preview to you. About the round, but and the review of Origin, because Thursday is going to be a bit of a struggle. But we will finish this by saying, go New South Wales.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. He's had 3 series wins, 3 series losses. There we go. Go Queensland, and we'll talk to you guys, Thursday or Friday. Bye.
See you.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.